B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Second and goal to go from the two. Allen motions left to right, then reverses direction. Brady under center. A give to Burkhead. Runs it left for the win! Touchdown, Patriots! And they're bound for Super Bowl 53!
What a call, Sosie. We're going back, baby. And there ain't nothing you can do about it. America's worst nightmare is back. We're going to our fourth Super Bowl in 5 years. Pack your bags, start our buses. We're coming home, Boston. Oh, my God. Can't believe it. It's not their year, right? It just might be. It just might be.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it is Gasper Murray here, 98.5 The Sports Hub, and also 98.5thesportshub.com, and available anytime in your Alexa voice-activated speaker simply by saying, Alexa, play 98.5 The Sports Hub. I get such a childish kick out of doing that because I feel like it's definitely turning on someone's Alexa voice-activated speaker in their home. Alexa, play 98.5 The Sports Hub. Well, Chris, there it is. The call, the Patriots, the final call, the Patriots 37-31 overtime win over the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead, courtesy of Bob Sosie and Scott Zolak. I did love Zoe's call. I can't hear it enough of America's worst nightmare is back, because it does seem pretty appropriate anywhere outside of New England. But, of course, that takes place last Sunday in the AFC Championship game. To me, even a week later here, or near a week later, still an somewhat improbable win, considering that this felt like a lost season as late as December, where they dropped two straight, that hideous loss in Miami, followed by basically a no-show in Pittsburgh, where they've continued to have a lot of success up until that game. And then Josh Gordon finds himself suspended again. And at times, they just looked straight up kind of terrible. Well, certain players did. Like, Brady was dealing with that knee thing. Or maybe he got old. Like, was just Gronk wasn't Gronk anymore. It was just like, oh, God. How many times did I say during the season, this feels like 2013? This feels like 2009? Yeah. Maybe a little drastic with the latter, but it did feel like an off year for them. But here we are, a ridiculous third straight Super Bowl. They're the first team since the early 90s Bills to go back to a Super Bowl after losing it.
25 years.
You were there. You picked them last week. Hey, shame on me. I'm glad I was wrong. You said I was doing it just to kind of protect myself. But no, I really did believe, as good as they looked against the Chargers the week prior, they had looked so good at home, even against good competition throughout the season, like the Minnesota Vikings, Green Bay at the time. I thought that was a really good win. So, all right, I figured they'd look good against the Chargers. Not as good as they did, but that last week, it just showed, you can really never count this team out. You can never count out Brady and the balls on them. Just over this near 20-year run, it's ridiculous. And here we are again, another Super Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely remarkable. I mean, obviously the consistency of what they've accomplished, but also what they did in Kansas City just in terms of the team they morphed into to win that game. I mean, really, it was like two different teams. I mean, in the first half, they came out and pounded the rock and drained the clock. That was the whole thing. Like, you can stop Patrick Mahomes. It was pretty clear that was the game plan, too. You can stop Patrick Mahomes by not letting him get on the field. And that was a huge part of what they did. They set the tone with that first drive, obviously. You know, you go march down the field, and it takes you 15 plays and 8 minutes and 5 seconds to go 80 yards, and you just punch it in on them. And it was a lot of two back sets. It was two backs and two tight ends. It was two backs and one tight end. They got to the goal line. Ladrian Waddle was eligible, so it was two backs and three tight ends. So the way that they were able to do it was amazing. And then in the second half, when they needed to throw it, particularly in overtime, those three third and tens, they reverted back to what we're used to, which is a team that can throw the ball with precision and efficiency and accuracy and be deadly. So this was really one of those sort of find a way victories, and what I think has been a find a way season.
Oh, definitely. And credit to Ted Johnson, who's now with us at 98.5 The Sports Hub. When he would make his weekly appearances that he's been doing with Phil Grimes on Thursdays, heading into the playoffs, he had said they flipped a switch. They flipped a switch starting with the Jets and Bills games. And especially that Jets game, I was like, I don't know. So he came in this week with a shirt that said, I disagree with Ted Johnson, because collectively we were like, come on, Ted.
Yeah, yeah.
But that Jets game, I remember you saying when you covered it, you were talking to Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News, who covers them. They're like, even he didn't know who the cornerbacks were.
Yeah, he had
were.
No idea. It's like, who are these guys, these scrub corners out there? But sometimes it's more about you than about the other team. And I think...
So Ted was right, ultimately.
Ted was right. And Ted certainly knows more football than either of us. But I think what happened in that circumstance is, regardless of who the Patriots were playing, I think they got their confidence back. And that's not a, you know, that's not in-depth X's and O's analysis like what Ted saw. But I do think that sometimes you just need to see it. Like, you know, my favorite football philosopher, Bill Parcells, always says confidence is solely the result of demonstrated ability. The Patriots hadn't really demonstrated the ability to do some of the things that they did in those last two games. And regardless of the level of competition, the fact that they did demonstrate they could do those things, I think it gave them a ton of confidence going into the playoffs. And that makes any team with confidence in Brady and Belichick and a healthy Julian Edelman and a healthier Rob Gronkowski, who's committed to blocking, is dangerous. And we've seen that. And the other thing, I have to give a lot of credit to Belichick and Josh McDaniels, too, because again, I do think, and I know we talked about this on Felger and Maz, and I know that, you know, Felger's an anti, you know, running backist, but the reality is they changed their identity offensively. They are using the run to set up everything else.
That's
they
what
are.
I think.
They are. And while he's right that teams are still approaching them like a traditional Patriots team, which means you're going to see 5 and 6 defensive backs, they're countering that by being able to run the football. And that hasn't always been the case in the past. And this year, it really needed to be the case because they don't have the depth of options in the passing attack. Obviously, White's really good, and Edelman's really good, and Gronkowski's, you know, come back somewhat. And look, no, Hogan was good, and Dorsett will make enough plays. But again, you know, we're not talking about vintage Patriots passing attack. They need that running game to help some of those other guys get open, and they've had it. And that was my biggest question going into the postseason, Jim. Was they were 5th in the league in rushing during the regular season. They ranked higher in rushing than passing. The last couple of times that had happened, when they really got into it and needed to run the ball, you know, like 2006 or 2013, they couldn't really do it. Yeah. This time, they can do it.
So they're confident, and I also think they're unified. And that's one of the things that Ted's you know, pointed out, too. If you look at those games, while, okay, you got to maybe take it with a little bit of grain of salt because it's the Jets and the Bills at the end of the year. Like, look at the sideline. You see that they're a little more up. They're cheering for each other. Like, how much of that do you think maybe has to do with the subtraction of Josh Gordon? Do you ultimately think that that was a good thing, that that's maybe one of the things that helped unify this team? You're getting more out of Philip Dorsett. You're getting now more out of Chris Hogan, thankfully. Is Gordon being gone, did that ultimately end up being a good thing for this team?
I mean, it's hard for me to say. I would say no, because I still think,
from a weapon standpoint,
he would help, and he played pretty well. He averaged 18 yards a catch, and he's still a deep threat. But I do think there's something to the idea that guys on that team really like Philip Dorsett, and they're happy that he's playing again. He's getting playing time, and he's a really hard worker. I do think that's sort of boosted the morale. But, I mean, in terms of Hogan, which game was it, the Bills game? He sat with the defense?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, you know, one of Ted's big turnaround games, Hogan sulking on the bench
point,
sitting with the defense. So, I mean, you know, I can't buy into that one all the way.
So you were there. You've been not on the beat, but covered this team for quite some time. Have you ever seen, I don't know, the what happened afterwards, how they were in the locker room, how they were all acting? Have you ever seen this team that up? Like, it felt like they were like a young, scrappy team that just, you know, that nobody believed in. And I know that they've had this chip on their shoulder because there have been doubters.
Absolutely.
Like myself.
No, there have, I mean,
others,
but look, I don't deny there have been doubters, no question. And at times I've been one of those doubters. It's just, you know, what degree is it? I mean, no one said you sucked. Like, you know, that wasn't the case. But whatever you got to do, like, if this is
whatever
the end
works.
Result, like, say we said you sucked. Whatever you guys got to do to keep playing like this, keep doing it. Just do you.
Yeah, but I think between Belichick and Brady, either press conferences, there was like a lightness to them, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised. I was like, wow, they really are like, you know, typically there's almost like this systematic and almost robotic way that they act after they win, even playoff games. This, again, they reminded me of like the 2001 Patriots, or a young, scrappy team. And there was like a giddiness to them that I haven't seen in
Well, because
in
I think they know it's been a difficult year, and I think they know that they don't, deep down inside, they know that this is not the most purely talented team that they've ever had, and they know that they've gotten the most out of this team and that they needed everybody to play their best on Sunday to win in a very difficult environment when they hadn't been good on the road all year long. I think part of it, too, was, look, as good as the Patriots have been for forever, they had not gone on the road and won a playoff game since the 06 season, 07 calendar year in San Diego. So that's quite an accomplishment. I mean, what they did, and to do it in an AFC championship game against that team in one of the most hostile environments in the entire NFL with no Josh Gordon, that was really impressive. And I think you could feel the sense. I think a lot of that came from the sense of accomplishment. You know, I think normally the Patriots don't allow themselves to feel that sense of accomplishment after one win. I jokingly have said over the years that in Foxborough, it's the joyless pursuit of perfection.
Right.
This was not one of those times. This was like, we really accomplished making it to the Super Bowl, winning this game against this team in this environment. We really accomplished something. And I think they let their guard down a little bit to let you know that that's how they felt.
Oh, no doubt. And I think I'm not alone in saying that game took years off of my life. Like, it was so draining in that second half. But to me, with apologies to that 06 divisional win against the Chargers, that improbable comeback win, It's now bumped out of my top five. That makes my top five for playoff Patriots games I've ever watched.
It was incredible.
It was unbelievable.
It was a great game. You know, it's funny. I said this in the first half, actually when they were up 14-0, and I turned to Dan Shaughnessy and I said, this has a little like 2006 in Indianapolis feel. Like, they've raced out early. You know, can they hold on? Obviously in 06 they couldn't. You know, this time they did. They held on. Well, they sort of did. I mean, it had to go to overtime, but they ended up winning the game. But as well as it was going in the first half, I was like, this isn't over. This is like they jumped out to this early lead, and now they're going to have to hold on for dear life.
In the back of my head, up until the clock read zero and they won in overtime, Chris, was that interception by Brady in the end zone is going to come back and bite them in the ass.
Oh, really?
It's going to bite them in the ass. It's going to bite them in the ass.
That was tough.
And I had that same kind of feeling. And the quick scoring ability of that Chiefs offense, and really without Tyreek Hill, who had one catch on the day.
Yeah, one catch for 42 yards.
And they don't have Kareem Hunt. Their longest drive was like 4 minutes, 12 seconds, something like that. Like, bang, 7 points, bang, bang. It was like, oh, God, but unbelievable, incredible win. And so you mentioned the overtime. I want to get your thoughts on this because I know that this has now been a thing. I think it's a lot of sour grapes from people that are just tired of the Patriots. They're tired of the dominance. They're tired of this team just winning. How does it keep happening, even in what feels like an off year? Do you want to see overtime change? So I want to get your thoughts on that coming up. And, hey, let's hear from you, huh? Another Super Bowl trip, 617-779-0985. First hour is going to be Patriots heavy. Celtics got a big one tonight against the Golden State Warriors. So the Sports Hub Celtics show coming up at noon as well. So it's Gasper Murray. We're off and running here on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Helmet side is heads, the T side is tails. Helmet is heads, T side is tails. New England, again, for the visiting team, it's your choice.
Heads.
Heads. Heads is
Matthew Schletter.
It is heads.
You want the ball.
He called it.
New England's a toss.
And he won it.
What we're seeing.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised that this became a thing this week. People bitching about the overtime rules and how they should be changed. It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Patriots have won the coin toss 3 times in the playoffs. The Snow Bowl game, going back to 01 season, 02 playoffs against the Raiders. Obviously, Super Bowl 51 against the Atlanta Falcons. And this past Sunday against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. So 3-0 with the coin toss. I don't know, Chris. Do you think that overtime should be changed? Because personally, I find the whining hysterical because I think people need to be more transparent about it, because the people that are bitching about it, you're just mad that the team you're pulling for lost, or you're just tired of this Patriots narrative. It's that simple, because I have no problem with it. And if you want it to go 10 minutes, look, to Felger's credit, he's brought up that Bill Belichick is the one that said he would like it to be a full quarter. Fine.
Yeah, Bill also has given us the 33-yard extra point.
Yeah. How's that worked out?
Yeah, how's that worked out for the Patriots?
If you kick off to the team that's receiving, that's won the toss, and they return it, that team that gave up that return for the touchdown, you mean to tell me they should get another chance? Please. That's the one that's like, no. Then no. Like, you deserve to lose. Make a stop. Your defensive players, especially if you have, if you have, like, you know, unbelievable defensive players like the LA Rams do up front with Aaron Donald and Dominican Sue, if they can't make a stop, I'm sorry, that's on you. Quit your whining.
Look, the way I look at it, you know, I'm partial to the rules because, you know, they're basically rules I came up with. and wrote about before they implemented them in the Globe. And for me, the idea at the time was that let's not settle these with field goals. Remember, that was the big complaint back then.
So,
and people forget how bad that was. All you had to do was get in field goal range, and literally teams would just kneel three times and kick it.
I'm glad they changed that. They changed that after that 09 NFC Championship game, the Saints and Vikings game, where it just, you know, that game was incredible. Favre throws that god-awful pick. It goes to overtime. Saints get the ball. They win the toss, go down, kick the winning field goal, go to the Super Bowl. So I'm with you. I'm glad they changed that. But I'm sorry. You score a touchdown on your first drive, you can't make the stop. F you.
That's I mean, that's the way I feel. Here's the other thing about it, too, is both sides know that a touchdown ends it. So the offense knows and the defense knows. So it's not like the defense doesn't know that they give up a touchdown, the game's over. Like, you got to stop them. You got to get them off the field. Kansas City had three chances on third down.
Yep.
Third and 10. They couldn't do it. So how many chances should they get?
And I don't think that there's been enough blame put on Andy Reid's shoulders for how he handled that overtime period. And maybe there has been in Kansas City. I'm not looking to listen to their stupid radio stations. But use a timeout, dude. Especially towards the end when Burkhead ultimately goes in for the game-winning touchdown. On the broadcast, Tony Romo was going, look at all the hands and the hips. Call a timeout, dude. Nope, runs in, game over. It's it. Like, dude, like, you know, read the field. What's going on here? Call a timeout.
He's looking at the laminated play sheet for when he gets the ball back, except for looking, he didn't get the ball back.
Looking at the Cheesecake Factory menu. Like, oh, man, those egg rolls look so good. So that's on him, too. I guess I shouldn't be surprised with all the whining this week from a lot of the national talking heads.
But we had this before, though. Do you remember? I think it was a game in Seattle that Peyton Manning lost and he didn't get to touch the ball. Do you remember? There was the same whining then. It was like, oh, Peyton Manning didn't get to touch the ball. These are terrible rules. We have to change them. Here's what I would say to the people that want to change it. And I understand where Bill's coming from, too. I get it. The league, I think, wants some sort of sudden death element to it. A touchdown certainly better than a field goal. But here's the thing. You can't say that you prioritize player safety and then tell me you want a 10-minute or 15-minute overtime. Because that's what drives this, is that they don't want these guys playing another 10 minutes full or another 15 minutes full. There's a player safety element to it. They want the game to end.
Yeah.
And so if we don't care about that, then just play another 15-minute period, or let's play a 10-minute period. They already shortened the overtime. I mean, the overtime was 15 minutes before, and they shortened it to 10. Obviously, it's still sudden death, but basically if nobody scores, you know, it would just keep going and going until you played out the full 15 minutes. Now it's only like 10 minutes. So when I look at it, I just don't think there's anything wrong with it. And again, I'm obviously biased to it, but both sides know what the deal is. I think it rewards a team for scoring a touchdown. The Patriots knew what they had to do. I think it's more exciting for a team to have to go down there and try and score. The Patriots were definitely trying to score and end the game. There's no question about it. And the Chiefs couldn't stop them. And if you do change the rule, let's say, okay, so it's a touchdown. And then Mahomes gets the ball. Well, he certainly knows that he needs a touchdown. So now, is that like a true representation sort of the game? They'd be going for it on every fourth down, which I don't have a huge problem with, but I'm just telling you, it's different. They'd go for it on every fourth down because they know they need a touchdown or the game's over. And then they score a touchdown. So now what are we going to do? Like, how is it going to end? Tell me what the answer is. Do you want to just say both teams get the ball and then it's sudden death? How are we doing it? What is the fix?
Let's go to Ryan and Wes Roxbury. You're first up here this morning on Gasper and Murray. You want to talk about the overtime whining. Go ahead, Ryan.
Thanks, guys. And I'll say I like the current rules, so I guess, Gasper, good job on those ones. And here's what I haven't heard on the commentary. After the 10 minutes, which is what everyone is saying, what if it's still tied? Do you still go to sudden death then? Do you implement the rules? At some point, the game has to end. If you can't win it in 60 minutes, then I think what they have now is pretty fair. I mean, the team that wins the toss still only wins about, what, 60-65% of the time. It seems even on both sides, and I haven't heard what the solution is. If you're tied after 10 and you're just playing all night, when does the game end and when do you go to sudden death? I think what they have now is pretty good.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, just keep playing. Keep playing. And that's where the player safety issue, like you mentioned, comes into it. Like, you can't do it. We don't have all day here. Like, you got to finish.
I mean, the only thing I could say is, unless you just want to change it for the playoffs, you know, if you just want to have a different format for the playoffs and just say, because I think from a player safety standpoint, the players honestly will tell you they don't care. Like, in an AFC championship game, like, I don't care if I'm old and decrepit, you know, 20 years from now because I had to play three overtime periods. If you want to change it for that, then you can make an argument there. But I think, you know, the format as it stands for the regular season doesn't make sense to change.
Mike in the car on the overtime rules. Hey, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, guys? All right, so I agree with you guys that it shouldn't change. Now, I have an idea, and it's kind of silly, but Felka wouldn't let us say him all week long because he's miserable. Anyway, all right, so the team that wins the coin toss gets the ball, goes down and scores a touchdown. If that's the case, give the other team the same exact time to score a touchdown. The game's over. And if they score a touchdown, then it becomes sudden death.
I kind of actually don't hate that.
Yeah, it's not terrible. I mean, the only question is, you know, what happens if the drive's like a longer drive? If it's like an 8-minute drive. So you have a 10-minute overtime period. What if one team strategically says, we want to take as long as possible to punch this touchdown in here? Like, what if the drive is like the Patriots' first drive of the game and it's 8 minutes?
Mm.
So what do you do then? Are you going to add
time? Oh, yeah, you can't add.
You're going to add time to the clock. It's sort of it's not a bad idea, but it takes a strategic element, I think, out of it. The only other thing I can think of, and see, I don't like the college rules, but if you wanted to say, like, each team gets the foot, because they're probably going to do away with the kickoff anyway, Murray. So if you want to say each team gets the ball at, say, their own 40-yard line and go from there, and then, you know, if you score, you got a match, and then after the first time, you have to, you know, go for two. If you want to do something like that, I mean, again, I don't love it, but it's if that would be one way of settling people's complaining. But again, you know, I think that only works if they're just going to do away with the kickoff, because you're eliminating an entire element of the game, basically, at that point.
Frank the Tank, you're next here on Jasper Murray. Hey, Frank.
Hey, boys. Look, first and foremost, you know, Godspeed on your journey down there for the Super Bowl. Come back in one piece. Look, real quick on the fallout of the Kansas City game, you're right, Murray. The only reason why people are bitching about it is because the Patriots won and because they thoroughly handled Kansas City through the first half, and it was a little scary in the second half, but overall, the Patriots went in there. They came, they saw, they conquered, and it pisses everybody else off, and that's fine. But you know what? No one's complaining about the overtime with New Orleans and the Rams. You know, there was other controversies in that game. That's fine and dandy. It's all true. But they're only complaining about it because the Pats won.
And this is why I know that there's a lack of transparency here. Because remember, did you hear any of this kind of bitching after Tim Tebow won the game against the Steelers back in 2011?
No,
on what, like the first
Thomas
play from scrimmage?
No. Or no, nobody cared.
The Seahawks going into overtime at the Packers in the AFC Championship game 4 years ago. After Russell Wilson throws three picks, they end up winning that game. Like, you don't hear that then.
No, nobody cared about it then because, it was Tim Tebow. He finally threw a great pass, and they ended up winning the game. You know, so that's the kind of stuff that drives me crazy. I don't mind that people hate us. That's fine. But, you know, people, I mean, a circle is a circle and a square is a square. So suck it. Eat it. Your team lost and just deal with it. Like, we dealt with it last year. Now, in terms of moving on to the Super Bowl, guys, I thought the offensive line really came and kicked ass in the first two games of the playoffs. And, I mean, I have no doubt that they're going to have to do that to get some kind of a running game going against the Rams. But from the get-go, when I found out that, you know, that they're playing the Rams, all I could think about was death by 1,000 paper cuts. I really think that they're going to come out throwing the ball just like they did in 04 when they got Corey Dillon and then they opened up with five wides. I think they're coming in throwing the ball, boys.
Thanks, Frank. Yeah, look, I want to take a look at the opposition here because there's things about the Rams that I certainly don't like. I'm no believer in Jared Goff, and for the most part, I feel the same way about Brandon Cooks. But there is something that's popped in my head here over the last day or so that absolutely terrifies me about Brandon Cooks' game. So I want to get into that. I want to get your thoughts on the L.A. Rams, Chris Gasper. When we come back right after the Sports Hub headlines here with Tim McCone here on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
First down, L.A. going for the whole thing. Cooks. Touchdown, L.A. Brandon Cooks.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Jared Goff, Brandon Cooks, two players the Patriots defense going to look to shut down a week from tomorrow night, Super Bowl 53. I'm no fan or believer, really, in either of those players, but there is something I'm terrified about, Chris, when it comes to Brandon Cooks' game, and that's his ability to draw pass interference. And here's why, specifically. The NFL obviously became hypersensitive to the catch rule after the Jesse James catch catch-no-catch thing in the Steelers game last year, right? Enough so that they essentially changed the catch rule in the Super Bowl last year, as evidenced by the touchdown by Corey Clement, which I was okay with because I want, if it looks like a catch, it's a catch to me, even though when it gets the Patriots, I did kind of hate it, but I agreed with it because to me, that was a catch. The way the catch rule has been altered and what you see this year, yeah, I'm good with it. If it bobbles a little bit, like, okay, the ground moves a little bit, but whatever. If it looks like a catch in real time, it's a catch. But they changed that in real time. What's been the talk of the league since the games last week?
Blown pass interference call.
The no call on that blatant pass interference at the end of the NFC Championship game, which you could easily argue cost New Orleans that game. The league and the officials now have their antennas up about pass interference. And my worry is, and they don't call me Big Jim Worry for nothing, is they're going to be real quick to throw flags for PI in Super Bowl 53. And while, again, I'm no believer in Brandon Cooks, I think he's a soft player, no player can draw a flag like Brandon Cooks. I have the stats to back it up. If you don't remember from last year, 244 penalties he drew last year. That was his best attribute as a Patriot. 244 yards in penalties.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Total number is 7 for defensive pass interference for 209 yards. So the PI alone, 209 yards last year as a Patriot. 5 for holding, 1 call decline, 1 face mask penalty. 244 yards. This year, he drew 141 penalty yards with the Rams in pass interference penalties. It's 4th most in the league.
Jeez.
I'm terrified about this now.
This is a great stat. I didn't realize this. I mean, I knew last year. I mean, honestly, some of that I sort of subscribed to, like, you know, Brady gets calls.
Remember the one on Bouye last year in the AFC Championship game? Like, again, I think he's somewhat soft. He did come on a little bit stronger at the end of last year. I'm just not that. Even the last throw to him last week in the NFC Championship game, it clanged off of his hands when he tried to pick up a few more yards to set up Zuerlein.
No, he dropped it on purpose, though.
You think?
That's what he said.
Oh, I don't
he said he dropped it on
second.
Purpose because he was going to lose yards.
That's
been what the Rams media has been saying. That's what he said, that he dropped it on purpose because he knew they were going to lose yards and it was going to make it a tougher kick. You're not buying it.
I can tell
by looking your face.
I think
you're not buying it.
I think he's somewhat soft.
Well, by the way, they've said it was like a heads up football play that he learned in New England.
Yeah. Either way, this guy, the ability to draw the PI, if he maybe has someone grabby on him like J.C. Jackson, watch for the quick flags. This is something, again, they altered this on the fly in the Super Bowl last year. They're going to be hypersensitive about PI because, you know, the league has made the apologies to Sean Payton and the Loomis there that's now in charge of
Mickey
the Saints.
Loomis.
Loomis. And, you know,
Lady Benson.
He's talked to Troy Vincent, has Sean Payton. Like, he's gotten the apology behind the scenes, but fans, especially Saints fans, Saints players, they want blood. So what are they going to do? They're going to be hypersensitive about it. So watch for Brandon Cooks and flags in that game a week from Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point, especially when you mention those numbers. And he is, you know, he's a fast guy. And I think a lot of times fast guys get the benefit of the doubt because they're out in front of somebody. So if the ball is underthrown or they flail their arms, there's sort of this idea of, even if it's not the case, it looks like, oh, well, he had the guy beat and something must have happened. And Cooks is a guy that will, you know, go down. He has a little Mike Ribeiro in him, you know, the old yard sale. he will do that. So that is scary. You know, it's also sort of interesting. How do the Patriots want to match up with these guys? Do you want Gilmore on Cooks and then J.C. Jackson on Robert Woods? How do you want to do these matchups? Because I think it's sort of interesting. Who's the one you want to take away? You know, the Patriots thrive on taking away what the other team does best and what they want to do the most. But on the other hand, when you look at the Rams sort of thrive on diversity offensively and having an answer for everything. And they basically have two number one wide receivers. It was really three when Cooper Kupp was healthy. So which guy are you going to try and take away?
What scares you most about that team on either side of the ball?
Offensive line. I'm just afraid. I think I'm scarred from last year's Super Bowl. Again, just the way the Patriots defense, just they couldn't get anywhere near the quarterback and they allowed the Eagles to run. And I just am petrified by that. And the idea that McVay's system has some similarities to Kyle Shanahan's. And that was another one where it's like, you know, the other team's kind of running the ball at will in the beginning. And that scares me because if the Rams can run the ball, it becomes really challenging for the Patriots to be able to cover all the different things that McVay has in his catalog. You know, he is a guy that comes up with answers and that has a lot of different weapons that he's willing to use. He's not You know, here's what the difference, and there's a lot of differences, but here's the main difference between the first time the Patriots faced the Rams in a Super Bowl and this one. You know, way back then, it was like, Martz was like, I'm going to win the way I want to win. I don't care if you want Marshall Faulk to run for 300 yards. We're going to pass, because that's what we do, and it's going to be pretty. I don't think McVay's like that. Whatever Belichick gives him,
he'll
take it, and he'll counter. And that's what's scary. And if that offensive line can block and the Patriots can't get any pressure on Goff, I know you think he sucks, but I think he's better than Foles. And I know Foles had it going last year. But if there's no pressure on him, I mean, he'll pick you apart.
Oh, sure. Well, no pressure. So I'll even say that, because, again, I'm no believer in Jared Goff. I think it has more to do with McVay, his system, that offensive line. And as long as Gurley is healthy, I feel like that offense kind of runs through him.
Yeah.
But no pressure, sure. Like, he's a marionette. He does, you know, whatever daddy tells him through the helmet speaker up until the cutoff time. But if there's pressure, he has to improvise. That's where I think it all goes to hell for Goff. I just think he's kind of a moron when he has to improvise. All that being said, no, you're right. He gets time. Like, he made big throws last week.
Yeah.
Just overall, from the standpoint of them winning that NFC Championship game, do you think the Saints got jobbed? Do you think the Rams deserve to be there?
I mean, the Saints definitely got jobbed on that call. But when I looked at the totality of the game, I thought the Rams played better. The Saints sort of let up after getting that 13-0 lead. I didn't think that Drew Brees had a particularly good game.
No.
The Saints couldn't run the ball. They let the Rams back in the game. You know, I don't know. I mean, when I look at it, obviously you can point to that call. There's no question about it. I mean, it's hard to look at that one and say it didn't change the outcome of the game. But at the same time, I didn't think the Saints – I thought, like, the Saints would have been holding on and getting away with one as opposed to winning the game.
Yeah, at the time I was incensed, mostly because – look, I'm a Saints fan. I love New Orleans as a city. But I just wanted to be right because I picked the Saints to go to the Super Bowl and win it last year. You know, you get dug in on a take. But that interception by Drew Brees in overtime
– geez.
Well, you're off the hook, Tom Brady. I thought the pick he threw when he was trying to throw it out of bounds, or wasn't he? Whatever that interception he threw at the end of the Steelers game in December, I thought that was the worst pick I've seen all season in the NFL. Nope, no, it was Drew Brees in that overtime.
You just can't do that.
Dude, take the sack. What are you doing? He's falling backwards and he chucks that up.
Yeah, that was a bad, right down the middle of the field. Ugh. That's the thing you cannot do. By the way, as an aside, and I know it's totally different and people, you know, this is just one I'm never going to give up. But that throw, under pressure, falling away, throwing it right down the middle of the field, to me, that's the exact reason why I hated, and to this day hate, the intentional grounding call on Brady at the start of Super Bowl 46. Because to me, if you throw the ball down the middle of the field, there is an inherent hazard in doing that.
Sure.
That's different from throwing it in the ground or chucking it out of bounds. You could do that. It could be intercepted. And to me, that's why it's not intentional grounding, and why to this day, that call drives me nuts. Because it's like anybody who, while they're being pressured, just chucks it down the middle of the field while they're being hit, that could so easily be intercepted that, to me, that's not the same as grounding the ball.
Alan, are you as paranoid as I am about the potential for a lot of pass interferences in Super Bowl 53?
I am, yes. I think they're hypersensitive. I agree that the refs may be hypersensitive to pass interferences. I'm also concerned that they're going to be hypersensitive about overcalling against Brady. Brady got the roughing the passer, and I think it's going to work in reverse, where they're not going to be, you know, calling it as much because of that call where Kansas City is making a big deal that was not roughing the passer, and it's going to work in the reverse favor again. So I think there's two sides of the referee judgment call that may hurt us.
Yeah,
No, but then back to the pass interference. I mean, it may, hopefully Gronk gets the benefit of it on the other side of that. So
yeah, so
there is that,
and he was getting mugged by Eric Berry in the AFC Championship.
But he's always
sort
of been like Shaq, like when Shaq played, and it was like what were fouls for other guys aren't fouls for him. So I don't expect that to change in the Super Bowl.
This John Parry, though, again with the calls and the ref that's been assigned to this game, a little bit nervous. Yeah, they don't call me Big Jim Worry for nothing. This John Parry, do you know? So he's since he came into the league, was made a head ref 2007, or a ref in 2007. He's done seven games of the Rams, St. Louis, and L.A. They're 7-0 in them. He did one game for the Patriots this year. It was their most penalized game in Pittsburgh.
The 14 penalty game.
Yep, for 104 yards. So I just think, like last year, you're going to see some hypersensitivity.
You know what I will predict in this game? the Patriots will get called for offensive pass interference. Because I think John Perry's crew is one of those crews that listens to the other team that says, look at this, they do this all the time,
sure.
these rub routes, it's offensive pass interference. There will be at least one offensive pass interference call against the Patriots in this game.
All right, your call is coming up here, long commercial-free segment. We'll go more Pats, segue into the Sports Hub Celtics show as they have a huge one tonight against the Golden State Warriors, 617-779-0985. Your calls, and Chris, I want to know if you think that Tom Brady has embraced his inner bad boy. It's a different Tom Brady we've seen here in recent weeks. We'll touch on that as well here. Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It'll be a good game. They're a good team. And we played them earlier this year. I know everyone thinks we suck and, can't win any games. So we'll see. It'll be fun.
I'm the bad boy. Never been the bad boy.
So I want to get your opinion on this, Chris. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Is part of the Patriots' success this postseason because Tom Brady's kind of embraced his inner bad boy? Because like George Costanza, Tom Brady's never been the bad boy, at least publicly. But if you think about it, after the win over the Chargers, he's doing that walk-off with Tracy Wolfson and saying, like, everybody thinks we suck. And it's like, okay, that was interesting. And it does seem like, at least to me, over the recent weeks, at least this postseason, Brady has some weird alter ego for the postseason. Like, he's the bad boy. He's literally being Tom MF Brady. And he's getting into character almost to repeat these affirmations. Like, I'm the baddest man alive. He's swearing a ton in that postgame last week. I think it's been scrubbed from the internet, but if that postgame video that they put up, like the live feed, he drops more F-bombs than Wolf of Wall Street. It was like, wow, where did this cover? It was kind of awesome to watch. The video that he did walking off, and he put it on Instagram with Rob Gronkowski, where he's playing Diddy's Bad Boy for Life, and they're just kind of like smiling like dicks looking into the camera. Like, that was kind of awesome, but that's bad boy behavior. He walked into the locker room, according to Mike Giardi of NFL Network, and said he's the baddest MF-er alive.
Yep.
It just seems real different from peaceful, good enough, smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me, Stuart Smalley, Tom Brady, that we've got here in the last couple of years. I love it, and it's obviously working. It feels like he's got a chip on his shoulder, but has Brady become the bad boy?
No, this is who he always is. The fake part, or the artificial facade, I should say, is what he gives you as the aw shucks. I think he's always sort of felt this way. Now, I would say I do feel like he's sort of embracing the villain role a little more than he has in the past, but I'm the baddest mofo around. And
so that's always been there.
Yeah, man. I mean, you talk to NFL players, they'll tell you he talks a ton of trash on the field. Like, talk to some of those guys that went against him, like Rodney Harrison and Ty Law. They'll tell you he's as competitive as they get, and he'll let you know how good he is.
Yeah, that's right. Who had that story? Maybe it was leading into last Super Bowl where they went back and talked about, like, in a beer-drinking contest, like, he was determined to win. So,
yeah.
Okay, but I guess, just from a public standpoint.
Did you see the one on SI with Brandon Spikes?
Brandon Spikes was upset he didn't make the Pro Bowl, and he's like, I'm not here for the stupid Pro Bowl.
Yeah, he said, according to the story, you think I play this
bleep game
for Pro Bowls? Like, I mean,
yeah, we're about rings.
Yeah, so I mean, that's who he really is as a competitor.
But publicly, we've never gotten it. So why not?
Not really.
Is it because he's towards the end? Is it because there's been so much doubt this year from people like myself? And
yeah, I think the doubt is definitely a part of it. I think, some of that stuff filters in. I mean, from the beginning of his career, I think this is a guy who's lived to prove people wrong. And I do think there's an element sort of for a long time in his career. There was sort of the genuflecting of, he's the greatest and he's the GOAT and you don't count him out. And then all of a sudden this year it was sort of like 2014 again. It was like, this guy's too old. He's not the same player. I never felt that way. I thought it had more to do with what was around him, but he hears all that stuff. And that fuels him. There's no question. He lives for that stuff. He lives to prove people wrong like that, even though he might not admit it publicly. I mean, that's sort of what fuels him on the inside. To me, the difference is, though, I think publicly, like, he's sort of embracing the, like, villain role. I think, and you see it with that video he put up with Gronkowski. I think that they are embracing the fact that people don't want them to win, outside of New England, and that people are sick and tired of them. And I think he's embracing that, and they're sort of relishing this opportunity to say, hey, America, we're not going anywhere, then there's nothing you can do about it, as Zoe said.
I mean, with that song and the smirks on their faces, that's porn for Patriots fans. But, man, outside of this region, it has to drive you crazy.
Oh, it's like a giant. That. I mean, it's basically like a giant middle finger, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what it is.
Bad boy Brady. I like it. He's embracing the bad boy role. Scott in the car on what we were talking about with the pass interferences that I'm terrified of in Super Bowl 53. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for my call. I just think it's going to be different. I think it's going to be the other way because they don't want to look bad. They're not going to call ticky-tack one so they can say they're going to call that, but they didn't call the other one last week. I think it's going to be the other way. It's not going to be called.
Maybe. I go back to how hypersensitive they were about the catch, no catch thing, how much outcry there was, and you've had that same kind of outcry with this because of what happened in that NFC Championship game, and I just feel like they're going to almost alter it on the fly like they did last year in the Super Bowl. Corey Clement, to most Patriots fans, look at that. And look, most fans, considering how they were calling it in the year, you look at it like, that's not a catch.
No, it wasn't. They changed it on the fly. They changed the rule, which was my issue. Like, you can't change the rules for the biggest game of the year. I mean, overall, I agree with you. I like that to be a catch, but it wasn't a catch all year long. So you can't make it a catch in the biggest game of the year. I thought the Patriots got hosed on that.
Ralph in Hyde Park, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Ralph.
Hi, guys. Here's a proposed solution for overtime. You go to one end of the field. One team gets three consecutive two-point conversion attempts. Then the other team gets three consecutive two-point conversion attempts. Whichever gets in more wins. And if they get in the same number of times, you alternate till one gets in and the other doesn't. Except move it back to, like, the 5 or 6 yard line.
Well, that's kind of like what they do in college.
Yeah,
and
see,
I hate the college overtime rules. It's not real football. It's like gimmicky.
No, and that's why, like what I said before, if you want to change it, instead of it being like the 25 or whatever, I'm saying like you got to push them back to their own 40 and start from there. It has to be some semblance of a real drive to try and get down there, particularly with NFL players. I mean, you know the difference between college football and the NFL. I mean, if you put an NFL team, you know, at the 25, NFL offense, it's that's too much. I mean, they're you know, at minimum going to get the field goal like pretty much every time.
Pat in the car, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Pat.
Hey, guys. How we doing this morning?
Good. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I was going to let my overtime thing go, but Dallas, that guy just brought it up. They play four quarters of football. They get to the end of the game, and it's tied. I mean, flip a coin. Well, you know, that's what they do. But the chips fall on me. I'm happy with the way it is. And, you know, if you couldn't get it done in four quarters, you know, Santa Fe's way of saying, we got to get it done.
Well, the thing is, as long as you don't get a touchdown, you do get the ball. That's the thing that irritates me about it, Jim. It's like, you got to get a chance. It's like, okay, as long as you don't give up a touchdown, you do get a chance. The old rules, if they just kicked a field goal, you were done. So now the idea is to incentivize the idea of scoring a touchdown, and everybody knows from the moment that coin is flipped and however it goes that, okay, here's the deal. First team to touch the ball scores a touchdown. This game it's not like the defense doesn't know that if they give up a touchdown, their offense isn't going to get on the field. They know that. And so all you have to do is not give up a touchdown, and your team does get the ball. Your offense does get a chance. And you know what? If they go down and score a touchdown, they win. The other team doesn't. You know, at what point do you say the game's over? Because then you could make an argument, okay, we kick a field goal on first touch. The other team gets it. They score a touchdown. Well, now how come we don't get a chance to match that? I mean, it would just go all day long. Like, you have to pick a winner.
Don't give up third down three separate times. And that second one to Edelman, I mean, it's as good a throw that Brady's made all year. It was on a postage stamp. So, like, that's on you. Make a stop, stupid. Okay, we have to pause the Patriots conversation for now and get to the Sports Hub Celtics show. Big one for the Seas tonight as they welcome in the reigning NBA champion Golden State Warriors. We'll get into this coming up next year right after the Sports Hub headlines with Tim McCone, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.